Hello, welcome to Sociology of Cars podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy XIE. You're listening to the fifth episode brought to you by 0260 Studios in San Dimas, California. Today, my guest is Brian, the LA Territory Manager of Hagerty Insurance. Brian, I am so honored to have you on the show. Welcome.
Oh, thanks very much, Jimmy. It's a pleasure to be here today. I appreciate the invite.
Of course. And when it comes to insurance, that's a huge topic. There's so much to talk about. Let's just take it slow. Who are you? What should the people know about you?
So I am, you know, just some guy. Love cars my entire life, and I'm lucky enough to be the LA Territory Representative for Hagerty Insurance Company. So my main duties are obviously spreading the good word of internal combustion to anyone who will listen and some who don't. But principally, you know, meeting with, educating and getting to know insurance agents and convincing them why the Hagerty products are the best option for their specialty cars.
How did you first get into cars? Like, what was your trigger point where you say, oh my gosh, cars are great and I want to get into it?
You know, nobody really knows. My mom tells me when I was born, the doctor spanked me and I made race car noises rather than crying. And it's just been this constant thing for me. You know, there's a couple like high points, obviously Knight Rider and Dukes of Hazzard. And while I'm dating myself, you know, there was this little game. It was like a plastic thing with a scrolling screen and a steering wheel and a shifter and the turn signals and all that. And, you know, I saw that when I was a kid and I'm like, I want that desperately. So it's always been a speed thing for me. You know, I love the cars. I love the noises they make. I'm a little bit like Ricky Bobby on my Hot Wheels and my bicycle and my rollerblades and skateboard. You know, I got to go fast. And then obviously, you know, the more I grew and learned, Gran Turismo was pretty formative for me. You know, that dropped in 1998 and I had just gotten my PlayStation 1. And it was a very informative thing because, you know, obviously there's a ton of video games about cars and all that, but this was the first one that tried to, you know, simulate kind of the experience of owning a car. You get to tune it and you get to wash it and get your driver's license and all that. And then also, you know, obviously growing up in America, hot rods, muscle cars and all that. Wow. So, you know, there's these, what are these weird looking cars? What is a GTR? Oh my gosh, you can get 1100 horsepower out of this thing. So right. It kind of opened my eyes to the fact that there's more to cars than just big honking V8s.
So there's like a series of things that inspired you. It's not just one trigger point. You just naturally gravitated towards automotive stuff.
Exactly. You know, wow. Flipping through the channels and you see cars going real fast around a corner. And I'm like, what is this? This is Formula One. I like it.
You know, one of the things that we talked about off air that really intrigued me was just the number of cars that you used to own. Can you give us just a list of all the cars that you owned so far?
Sure. And each one has kind of a unique story too. You know, so I got my learner's permit and my grandpa, God bless him, gave me his 1987 Ford Taurus. Beige paint, beige interior, beige experience. And as a young driver, it took 3 weeks for me to smash that into five cars, stopped at a stoplight. I took the insurance money from that and bought an 89 Honda CRX, DX, all of, I think, 70 horsepower to the wheels, but weighed nothing. So it was a blast to just scoot around town in and, you know, things that I look back on fondly, take a $10 bill and put it in the gas tank of that thing and drive around for a week. Those times are gone. Discovered drifting and got a 1996 240 SX. And so that was my college beat to death car. I, you know, redlined every gear change and power shifted for about 10 years in that thing. And then got a little bit of money, wanted to finally get a new car, and I grabbed the Scion FRS in 2012. And that was a really fun car. I mean, you know, what else is going to be 25 grand that'll play with 911s in the canyons? Very fun car, maybe too fun. Raise your hand if you've fallen victim to FRS snap oversteer. So back that one into the wall at about 40 miles an hour one night. And then the next one was, you know, the penalty box. Wife and I were working on buying a house, and I totaled my toy car. So I just took the insurance check and swapped that for a Corolla hatchback. Had to be stick. Was very hard to find the stick shift in that car and honestly didn't do me much favors because it was not a very enjoyable car. It was cheap and worked and I didn't have to think about it. But it was really kind of eye-opening. You know, when you're in the canyons, you're like, why is this guy going so slow? I hate him. But it's because the car is awful and he's terrified going that fast. Like he's doing the best he can, but just the car is not capable. So it was a decent car, but was not fun at all. So had to get something fun. So current car is a 21 Subaru WRX.
Wow. So I counted, that was seven cars. Yeah. you're definitely very knowledgeable when it comes to your own car stuff, having owned so many cars and the reliability, maintenance, and all the insurance stuff. The first time I met you, I remember you were wearing a Hagerty shirt. Mm-hmm. So I think as a marketing strategist myself, every time when I say Hagerty, I'm like, that's a classic example of a company becoming so big to the point where if you don't do effective storytelling for every branch that you have, mm-hmm. sometimes it can backfire a little bit because it can dilute a little bit. So I see you wearing the Hagerty shirt. I'm like, okay, Hagerty. And I go to Monterey Car Week, I see a Hagerty tent. And I see the Hagerty YouTube channel where Jason Camisa was comparing cars. I'm like, what is Hagerty? I thought it was like probably like a tent full of influencers because of Jason Camisa in those videos, right? And then it's only when we started talking, I'm thinking, I didn't know that you guys had an insurance branch. Mm-hmm. So for beginners, can you explain what Hagerty is?
Absolutely. So we are, I think it's fair to say, the world leader in specialty car insurance. And it kind of has all stemmed from that. You know, it was originally a boat insurance company. The Hagerty family lived on Lake Michigan and had classic wooden boats and could not find anybody to give them proper insurance. So they said, you know what, we'll make our own darn insurance company. And that was 1984. And obviously the rest is history. We've become the world leader in specialty auto insurance. And so, you know, when you get to that point, you have a certain duty to protect and defend the things that have brought you to this point. So the current mission statement is to save the love of driving and preserve this love and pass this culture and lifestyle on to the next generation who, frankly, doesn't appreciate it the way you and I and the older folks do. You know, it's Uber and Lyft and rideshare and what do I need a car for? And that's just insanity to somebody like me.
I didn't know that Hagerty has always been an insurance company. I thought it was like a YouTube media production company. See, exactly. That's the problem, right?
And so that's kind of the thought process is the car community has certain aspects to it. You discover cars and you want to learn about them. So we have the media channels. Jason Camisa is a wonderful host for that stuff. Yeah, multiple award-winning media programs that they've got going on. But more than that, you know, you need to find a car to buy. So we have a marketplace where you can buy and sell cars, and Broad Aero Group is for the really high-end cars, you know, geared towards like Barrett Jackson sort of experience and things like that. But aside from that, you know, there's just a bunch of other things that we help people out with. When you're a Hagerty Drivers Club member, you can access our valuation tool to know exactly what your car is worth in the current marketplace. I think if we stop selling insurance today, we'd become the world leader in classic car valuation. There's a lot of companies that kind of piggyback off the data that we provide. And you're also going to need, you know, places to find parts for your car and specialty shops, and we can help you locate those as well. So pretty much all aspects of the automotive community, including philanthropy. You know, we are registering vehicles in the National Historical Vehicle Registry and giving disadvantaged children scholarships to get their driver's licenses, learn how to drive manual transmissions. So pretty much if there's cars and people who like them involved, you'll probably find Hagerty there.
Got it. Wow. I mean, of course, Hagerty has existed for 500 years, and no wonder why you guys have so many different specialties.
Hagerty and I are both 40 years old, so calm down on the 500-year stuff, all right?
So when it comes to Hagerty Insurance, how does Hagerty Insurance differ from all of your traditional insurance? In other words, what is Hagerty Insurance?
Yeah, so it is mechanically similar to any auto insurance company. You got your VIN number, your home address, driver's license number, miles per year, and all that. The key differences for us are going to be the primary thing is the value of the vehicle. We give every car guaranteed value coverage. So, you know, Miatas, I think, are a prime example. They're just kind of, they're great cars, but they're not really super appreciated. You know, you talk to KellyBlueBook.com or go to Geico and enter your VIN number. They're going to say your 30-year-old Mazda, that's worth $12. Here you go. Have a nice day. We understand the specialty nature of that car means you park it at a car show. If it's in good shape, you're going to walk away with 10 or 15 grand. So one of the core things is valuing the vehicles for what they're actually worth for specialty autos. You know, Kelley Blue Book is great for your Camry, but for, yeah, something that's really experiencing a boon in appreciation these days and the value has risen, there's going to be a lot of value that Mercury Progressive isn't going to end up paying you for that car. The other side of it is our customers obsess about avoiding damage to the things they have insured. You know, you take your Camry, you park it outside, you road rage all the way to work, park under a tree, who cares? Your specialty car, you know, that's your baby. You park it far away, you don't drive it aggressively because you don't want to damage it in any way. So why are you paying normal car insurance prices when your car is not treated in a normal way?
Wow. Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is Hagerty has a different evaluation for your babies.
Yes.
And they also have a different policy than your traditional insurance companies. So for starters, let's say if I get a higher quote on my Miata's resale value, can I take that quote to any, like, where do I sell it to with that quote?
So, and that's the sort of thing about sales is it can be very speculative. You know, you get that guy who just hit the Powerball and he really wants a Miata. He's going to pay you whatever you ask for. You can certainly take that quote and try and get that price out of everybody, but it, you know, car buying is a very situational thing too. They're going to look at every little aspect of the car and find any way they can to give you less for it because everybody wants a good deal.
So it sounds like Hagerty is like the car enthusiast central.
Exactly. Yeah. They're definitely trying to be, you know, have something for everybody, from the people who have been in the scene their whole life and know everything about cars. We can still surprise them with some new stuff and we can help educate people that are just getting into the car scene.
Got it. So let's talk more about the Hagerty insurance and exactly how it's different, right? So for example, all the other cars, you were saying that you take care of your baby, you park inside, you only drive it on the weekend, not many miles. And those cars are typically expensive. But at the same time, you can argue that if you buy a $40,000 Miata, you only drive it once a week. That's pretty expensive for the usage. So I'm assuming what I'm hearing you say is Hagerty can provide a better price.
Exactly. Yeah. We're designed for cars that are your weekend fun toy. You know, we do actually require a normal daily driver car for every member of your household, just so that you're not, you know, need to go to the dentist one day. Well, I better take the Ferrari. You know, so the idea is that it's a car that we have a different usage profile because the way that you use that is different from a normal car.
But wouldn't you say that other insurance also have a category called pleasure? It's like a leisurely vehicle. They also have a rate for that. So how does that differ?
They certainly do. So, and it's the mileage per year is actually more of a rate factor than pleasure. You know, there's some argument that if it's purely a pleasure car, then you're driving it possibly in a more aggressive manner than you would be if you're just driving to work, because you're kind of just put cruise control on and listen to an audiobook or a morning radio talk show or some sort of podcast, for example. So it is certainly the idea is that we match the usage of the vehicle to how people actually use these collector cars. So you're not overpaying for normal car experience with your special car.
Based on my research, Hagerty covers Jay Leno's garage and some other expensive collections. So I'm really surprised, but I'm glad that you guys also cover quote-unquote regular sports cars like a Miata. Because Miata, for me, is my baby, even though maybe to Jay Leno, it's not.
Exactly. And there's all sorts of car people. You know, there's the guy who's worked his entire life and retires and finally buys that dream Corvette. And then there's the people who, you know, grew up, can't wait till the day they get their driver's license and they get something. But yeah, I mean, our values, minimum value goes all the way down to $3,500 for certain categories of cars. So we're able to go from that thing you just found in the barn and you're working on restoring up to the largest collections you're ever going to find.
Let's go back to you a little bit. So how did you get involved with Hagerty? Because you said that you have always been an auto insurance salesman, which I think you're awfully humble, I would say, auto insurance expert. But you've always been that. And then you've always been a car guy. Mm-hmm. And you go to all these car shows. You're just there for fun, right?
To some extent, yeah. I mean, the primary duties is, again, wrangling insurance agents for Hagerty. The rest of this stuff, they get out of me just because I love it. And it's a great opportunity for me. You know, the wearing that Hagerty polo shirt that you mentioned, it opens a lot of doors and it generates an instant level of respect when you show up to an event wearing something like that. So it is both, you know, networking and meeting great folks in the car scene and spreading the word as far as I can. And also it's, you know, kind of self-serving. I get to have a lot of fun while also representing the company's interests. So, you know, how did I get into Hagerty? I was a property and casualty insurance agent for 13 years, and I would work that desk job Monday through Friday and go to all the car shows I could find just because I love it. So it's a really kind of a fun tale of everything happening for a reason. You know, I was married, we had just bought a house, and then we broke up. So, you know, things like that, it's a fork in the road. You can take one of two paths. You can go down the route of self-destruction, or you can reinvent yourself and become something new. So, you know, did a little bit of self-destruction. I'm not going to lie about that. But, you know, one day you wake up and it's like, okay, I can keep doing this, or I can go do all the things that she never wanted to do because now I'm free and look how nice this is. So yeah, joined social media and just spammed a whole bunch of car junk all over my social medias. And so I think the one day I went to the Peterson event, and I forget the name of it, but it was a bunch of like high-end cars. So my Instagram stories were a picture of the car, identifying it, how much it's selling for, and lamenting how each of these is worth significantly more than my life is. Actually, somebody who worked for Hagerty saw that and reached out to me. So it's one of those things where I never would have been in that situation had it not been for the ugly thing that happened to me. So it's a path that takes you to where you're meant to be. And it was also just, you know, the love of the automobile carries the day over at Hagerty. So
right. Being the LA territory manager, what does that title mean? So you're not just an insurance expert, but you manage and supervise a group of salespeople.
Exactly. So the day-to-day stuff is going to be, you know, meeting with an insurance agent, talking to them about what they've recently quoted, educating them about all the things that Hagerty does that can help them resolve the issues that their customers have. You know, it's a very unique thing that the car scene, when you're in it, it seems huge, but it's actually very tiny and close-knit, and most people don't understand this. So it kind of our thing is to support, encourage, educate, and advocate for all aspects of the car community. But yeah, I mean, principal duties are to spread that message to insurance agents, let them know, you know, what options they have to address what's going on in the current marketplace, you know, and I think that's where we're uniquely positioned to really help. Home expense insurance has gotten very expensive. Auto insurance obviously has as well. So, you know, everybody's feeling that pinch. So the move to make is take your specialty car, get it off of those normal policies, give it to us and save a good chunk of change. And ultimately the goal is to make it seem financially secure and viable to have this special car. It's rather than just a money pit that's going to be gone if you crash it, we give you that proper protection so you can at least get back what you put into it and hopefully get another one to get back out there and have fun.
Got it. So do you also sell insurance yourself?
Yes. So we're kind of unique, and most insurance companies are either direct or through agents only. So we do a little bit of both of those. That said, you know, our thought process has always been that insurance agents bring good business. Sure, having been one for a long time, it might be pretty easy for me to say that insurance agents, I think, are crucial. But, you know, you say you run a business, right? You want to branch out into some aspect of business that you don't really know about. You don't just kind of step into it and trip and fall. Well, some people do. But, you know, the more prudent among us hire a consultant who knows what they're doing, has a wealth of experience they can bring to analyzing your situation and finding the best options for you. And that's really what an insurance agent is. They are an expert who is knee deep in it all day, every day. You know, they'll know of insurance companies that don't advertise on TV, so nobody's ever heard of them, and they'll find that solution for your situation. So I think insurance agents, it's really easy to give them a bad rap, but it's a really good group of folks. And I encourage you to use an insurance agent rather than, you know, going direct to the website and hoping you click the right buttons.
You know, as we were talking off air, something really impressed me that you were telling me about the excellent customer service example of Hagerty proactively reaching out to the customers post LA fire about, hey, do you need to claim anything? Is your car damaged? Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so what we did is we obviously checked the maps of the burn areas and compared that to a map of where our customers are located. So, you know, after the fires calmed down, we called all of them and said, how's your car doing? Do you need to open a claim? How can we help? So, you know, it's a situation where in insurance, it is very easy to become entrenched and lose sight of the bigger picture and become, you know, not necessarily bitter, but yeah, bitter. It can make you bitter fairly easily. So a situation like that disaster is awful, obviously, but it creates the opportunity for us to live up to the promise that we made to help people recover from things like this.
Right.
And so it was very heartwarming in that we opened a remote claims location at our garage and social in Van Nuys. And people would come in, you know, downtrodden, having lost everything with their pile of paperwork. And 20, 30 minutes later, they're leaving with a check and a smile on their face. Wow. It was a very, very heartwarming moment.
It's almost like an anti-insurance insurance. I find it really interesting when you talked about how when people have these specialty cars, some of the traditional insurance, they don't even know what it is, let alone insuring it or knowing its value. And also, if you need repair, how do they know where to find the part?
Absolutely. You know, again, normal insurance is great for what it is. Normal cars, you know, you take your Camry or your Accord to any body shop, they're going to be able to work on it. You have a Ferrari GTO. That requires a specialist. That requires very special parts. And Progressive, Mercury, Geico, they're just not equipped to handle a special car like that.
Right. So if they call Hagerty, you guys will be like, oh yeah, I know how to handle it. I know where to find the part. I know where the quote is.
Exactly. Odds are we are already friends with the best guys to do the work on that car in the area. And yeah, we understand what the value is because we have a full-time team. I think it's 14 employees who do nothing but monitor the car marketplace. Every time our customers buy and sell a car, that informs our database. So yeah, we've got our finger right on the pulse of what cars are worth.
I promise you guys, listen, this is not an ad. I am genuinely intrigued and I'm touched by the fact that it's very hard to find an insurance agent who is also a car guy.
Oh, yeah.
But Brian, you are a car guy. So I feel like you understand where I'm coming from and my needs. So you can recommend the best products for me.
Absolutely.
And that's pretty rare. You know, I remember, I'll give you an example. So I have a regular insurance, right? I won't name names, but when I had my CX-5 and my Miata, I added a CX-50. They're all Mazdas, right? I thought that my insurance agent would be very happy that I have three cars insured. But the day that I told him that I bought another car, he was like, hey, are all three cars yours? And then it's not just him asking, but he was asking just in a tone of like this like doubt and speculation, right? And then 2 weeks later, I got a letter from my insurance company asking me to scan the proof of my registration just to see if they're actually my car. And I just thought it was ridiculous because it's not like I'm having like three supercars. It was like two SUVs and one Miata. It's like nothing ridiculous, right? And if you're in the car scene long enough, you know that most people at least have like 2+ cars.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, three of my Miatas, the value is still less than like a 911 Carrera.
Yeah.
So nothing crazy. But because they're not car people, they think that maybe Jimmy has opened up a dealership without telling us.
Exactly.
But little did they know, that's just what we do. Some people have like a whole yard
yeah.
of cars.
And when I was an agent, I had a customer who was a mechanic. So, you know, he'd do work on somebody's car and they couldn't pay the bill, or he gave them the estimate and it was too much. So now he's got this broken car. Well, he'd take it home, fix it himself, and flip it. So he's constantly putting cars on and off of his insurance policy. And the company sent a letter that this is not an individual, this is a dealership, and we're dropping the policy. So I like to think of it this way. You and I share the same mental illness. You know, I am not well. I work Monday through Friday with insurance agents 40, sometimes 50 hours a week. What are we going to do on Saturday and Sunday? Let's wake up at 4 a.m. and drive an hour and a half to stand in a parking lot and talk about cars. You know, and it's not a normal thing. It's not a normal thing for one person to have several cars. But I think it's a beautiful thing that there is a company which, you know, caters to that lifestyle.
Right. And I think you guys also cover track insurance.
Yeah. So that is, you know, again, with the overarching mission statement being to preserve the love of driving and pass this love on, tracks are the safest place to figure out what your car can do. You know, there's a lot of places to do that. All of them involve some sort of risk. The track is the safest environment for it, but it's widely known. And if you don't know, please understand, insurance is for the street. And when you get onto the track with your car, insurance ends.
Oh, no.
The red mist descends and you go into the wall. You are on your own, my friend. So that is what scares a lot of people away from having that track day experience, is the understanding that if something does go wrong, I'm toast. We actually have a track day insurance program where it's, you know, a couple $100. It covers you for a 1 to 3 day hot lapping, HPDE, time attack sort of track day experience. And so, yeah, actually, if you do make that mistake and your car ends up toast, you are covered.
And $200 to $300, is that for every car?
It varies wildly based on the value of the cars, you know, but obviously some of us have much deeper pockets than others.
So if the insurance is really like $200 to $300, that's like the price of one tire. Price of one tire, I can insure my entire car for an entire track day. That's a good deal.
Exactly. And that's the overall thing about insurance that I think people maybe don't think about, is we're looking at, you know, that number at the bottom of the page. How can I get that lower? I don't want to pay this much. That is not the only concern with insurance. And so, you know, why would I pay $300 to get this track day insurance? I'm not going to crash. I'm the Stig. Yeah, I'd rather pay the $300 to be safe than pay $37,000 because I've totaled my Miata.
Well, so let's say if the car is totaled,
mm-hmm.
you cover that too.
Yes.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
For $200 to $300?
Again, varies depending on the cost of the car. Obviously, the more valuable the car is, the higher that price becomes. But yeah, that's the idea, is to, it is up to a maximum value of $150,000. So, you know, those of us who are lucky enough to have GT3s, there's still a little bit of risk involved there, but I think I'd rather get $150,000 than nothing.
Right. Well, so let's say if somebody wants to explore the options with Hagerty, what do they do? Do they contact you or do they go on the website?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Hagerty.com is going to be, you know, where you're going to find out all the stuff about us. Again, shameless plug, I recommend insurance agents. You know, we are great at what we do. Most of us, cars are this much of your life. You've got a whole bunch of other things going on. You've got the home to insure, children going to college, rental properties. You know, do you need an umbrella policy? Do you even know what that is? So I think if you use the insurance agency, they are going to you know, interview you and learn about your life and figure out what's important to you and match you with the insurance products that best suit that lifestyle. And then obviously there's, you know, monitoring the market. They hear things changing with some company. They know that it's about time to move you from company A to company B. And that's something that as a average consumer, you're probably not going to be privy to. So I'm always going to recommend to go to insurance agents. I think they bring an incredible amount of value and are very underappreciated. And if I may plug my number one insurance agent.
Please do.
Izzy the Insurance Guy, Cars and Coffee Classics in Anaheim.
What is their Instagram?
So he is Cars and Coffee Classics and Izzy the Insurance Guy. So actually, if you're in the Anaheim area, his Cars and Coffee is tomorrow morning. So they shut down Center Street Promenade in Anaheim and line it with a bunch of amazing JDM cars. And it's a great time. You know, last time I was there, the place was full, and then Nakai-san rolls through with 15 RWB Porsches, and the crowd just went wild. So, and Izzy is also, you know, he's knee-deep in the scene. He's a member of Z Car Club of America. You'll hear him on the microphone at JCCS in Long Beach. So he's a, you know, if you're looking for an insurance agent who's a car guy, that's the one.
Wow. What is your Instagram handle?
My Instagram is Dr_Kadorian. So if you want to drop me a follow, you're going to find cars that I think are cool and a bunch of weird stuff that I see that that makes me laugh. So maybe not everyone's cup of tea, but yeah, drop me a follow. Send me some invites to car shows. You'll probably see me there.
Well, so I think that's a good segue to a little break. When we come back, all the secrets of insurance premium.
Ooh.
You're listening to Sociology of Cars podcast. This is Jimmy XAE. So Brian, let me tell you a little bit more about our sponsor, 0 to 60 Studios.
Please
in
do.
San Dimas, California. So the studio that we're in right now is actually on a loft. We have two gigantic windows that we can see out to the first floor. Right next to me, there's a printing shop. Downstairs is the 1,000 square foot sim racing studio, state of the art, gigantic curved monitors with a lounge with leather sofas. Hear this, leather sofas. Everything leather is always better, right?
Ooh, Corinthian leather.
Right next door, we have the Auto Lab, where we do PPF, vinyl wrap, tinting. We also launched the 0 to 60 Auto Works that they do mechanical works here now. So there is nothing that you can't do here as an auto enthusiast. They also allow and you to host birthday parties, private events, your own car meets. Nowadays, they also have a Friday Canyon Drive. So, I mean, just come and check it out. It's in San Dimas, California, probably not too far from you if you come on a weekend. Go online, look for 0 to 60 Studios on Instagram, hit them up. They're super friendly people here.
Yeah, this place is cool. We're looking, you know, in the podcast studio, looking down on them wrapping a C8. And it's also, I love these hidden gems. I was actually in this parking lot earlier this week. I have an insurance agent at the front of the lot. Didn't even know this was here. So I love, you know, you come back to the industrial warehouse and the door opens and it's like that jewelry box opening reveal moment. I love it.
And you know what's so important for car enthusiasts too, though? There's plenty of parking.
Ah, yes. And good wide parking spaces too.
Yeah. So come with your friends and I think you'll have a lot of fun. Just come and then nobody gets hurt.
If you know it's good for you, you'll get over here right now.
So Brian, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge earlier. I think a lot of our listeners are young and they're eager to learn about the myth of speeding tickets, insurance premium, and all these stuff. So first of all, you called yourself the expert of speeding tickets. What does that mean?
Yeah, so, you know, professional insurance agent, representative of insurance companies, and owner of a god-awful driving record also. I think probably 25 speeding tickets across my life. I'm on three of the four you're allowed to get in 1 year before they call you a negligent operator and pull your license. So yeah, I got tons of experience dealing with police at the side of the road.
Well, that's the goal, right? So when it comes to the myth of speeding ticket, I'll tell you this. Usually when you get a speeding ticket, I would recommend anybody to fight it with the help of a traffic lawyer. But let's say if you do get convicted and you do get a point on your record, is that the end of the world? Is the insurance going to drop you?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to hurt. Obviously, insurance is already at an all-time high, and it only goes up if you get that speeding ticket. Generally speaking, it's not the end of the world. You know, as they say in the streets, the first one's free, you know? you get that ticket, your price is going to go up for insurance. So yeah, if you can use an attorney and get out of that ticket, you can use your traffic school to clear that point off your record, and the insurance company doesn't find out about it, then that's ideal. You know, you're not necessarily going to get dropped if you get your second speeding ticket. So California has what's called the Good Driver Program. If you have less than one active point on your driver's license, you have the Good Driver discount. And insurance companies are obligated to insure you if you want them to. You know, you'll find those situations where this company has a price that's just in four times higher than the other companies. Well, they're required to have you buy that insurance if you want, and they kind of price it accordingly. So they don't necessarily want you to buy that insurance. Generally speaking, you're going to be okay until they have to pay something for you. You know, so there's two types of insurance in California. There's the preferred and non-preferred tier. So myself, for example, I've been with Mercury Insurance Company for, you know, 20 odd years. In their preferred program, you can have up to 2 points in your license. So I got three tickets and I got kicked down to their non-preferred tier. So my price went from $130 to $440 a month. Wow. But, you know, it would be worse if they dropped me and I'd been forced to go with somebody whose markets are designed to pick up, you know, bad driving records and things like that. So generally speaking, you know, you want to try and keep your driving record as clear as possible. If you get that first point, you know, your price goes up. It might be a good idea to preserve your traffic school option for that second point, with, if you're anything like me, is going to be coming sooner or later. But yeah, I mean, generally speaking, you would get moved from the preferred to the non-preferred tier. There are certain carriers who do only preferred. So it's not everything with insurance is going to be, you know, depending on the situation. It's not guaranteed that you will get dropped after getting two speeding tickets. The possibility is there, but a lot of companies will have, you know, the two pricing tiers that they will move you to if you have a bunch of speeding tickets. Then once you crash and they actually have to pay something for you, that's when they will often drop you. If you've got a couple speeding tickets and then you have that accident, insurance is all about, you know, managing risk. They're taking money in. They don't want to be paying money out. So, you know, the more points I get, the more I'm paying them. If I'm not crashing, it's actually profitable. But insurance is actuary science and risk management. So, you know, this type of person in this area with that type of car and this driving record has a 40% chance of having a crash versus 25, and we're not comfortable with that, so we're dropping you.
Got it. So just to recap a little bit. So if you have 1 point on your license, they're obligated to still offer you the Good Driver discount.
Correct.
And they're obligated to still insure you. Mm-hmm. But if you have two, then the possibility of dropping you is there.
Exactly.
But it's less
the,
likely.
The kind of the California consumer protection of having that Good Driver discount, you know, DMV pulls that off of your record, and then the insurance companies have the option to drop you.
Got it. So you have 2 points, they have the option to drop you, and then you also lose your yes. Good Driver discount.
Yeah.
But usually, do insurance drop you after 2 points?
You know, again, I'm a great case study. My price went through the roof, but they haven't dropped me, you know. And that said, that FRS that I lost, Mercury did write me a check for $13,000. So, you know, one of the things to bear in mind is insurance companies are companies at the end of the day, and they get a very bad rap. But, you know, Mercury is minus, I think, still $1,000 for having knowing my name. You know, I've been paying them insurance for years, but then I totaled a car and they had to pay for it.
Got it. So it's really like, okay, so if you have already 2 points, don't get into a crash, because as soon as they have to pay something, then they say, all right, let's review those 2 points that you've got.
Exactly. You know, the first point is not that big of a deal. The second point is that's when you better do an impression of your grandma driving for the next 18 months.
Got it. And then, so let's say when you do have a point, the insurance premium goes up.
Correct.
By how much?
And that's going to be fluctuating wildly. You know, it's one of the things with insurance is everybody's like, well, how much is it? And it's, you know, the rating tables are 40 or 50 data points. So it's really hard to put a finger on it. Generally speaking, you're going to think about maybe 30% per point per year.
And then how many years do I have until that point is dropped?
The points stay active on your record for 3 years. If you get a DUI, California voids that Good Driver discount for 10 years from the date of the conviction. And then traffic school is available to remove 1 point from your record once every 18 months.
And one of our listeners did ask, why is it that when I decreased the amount of cars to be insured by the company, my premium actually went up?
So there are a couple of good stories about that. One of my coworkers had a Mustang Mach 1. And, you know, bad driving record, dude was very young, just getting murdered on insurance. And then picked up a old Camry Coupe as his daily driver. I put that on the policy and the price went down. And I think another one is there was a guy who has a fully built 370Z show car and a Toyota Prius that he drives around town in. So it's insurance is geared towards getting the value that they think that they would need to be able to pay out if something goes wrong. So there's something called a symbol factor. You know, each car is assigned a symbol from 1 through, I think, 50 or 60. And then basically the risk and expense of insuring that car is encoded in this symbol. So the Mustang Mach 1 is a very, very high symbol. It's a fast car. Everybody knows if you see a Mustang, you better run because it's going to run you over. And so that all goes into the database. So what they've done is now they've taken, you know, the car that was his daily driver, 13,000 miles a year in the Mustang. Mustang's down to 1,000 miles a year and he's daily driving the Camry. But the rate factor puts you on the most expensive vehicle. So it's kind of, it's not supposed to be that way, but it's fun how sometimes it backfires and your high symbol vehicle now at 1,000 miles per year is assigned as primary. So effectively your mileage rate drops from 13 to 1,000 miles per year. Wow. And so that guy with the fully built 350Z show car, they force that as his principal car. I'm like, but he barely ever drives that. He drives the Prius. Couldn't change that. And his price dropped noticeably by adding his fully built car onto his insurance policy.
Because of the fact that the Mustang is seen as a symbol of danger.
Exactly.
Got it. So why is the Miata insurance so high?
It's one of those things where it's the usage profile of the owners. You know, who are you going to be? You're going to be a hairdresser or somebody's grandma who wanted a cool convertible. You're going to be Jimmy who goes through a set of tires every 3 weeks up on Angela's Crest.
What?
who said that? So yeah, it's the Lexus IS300 when it came out was the highest priced car to insure under $50,000. And I think the Scion FRS was that way too. It started at a certain price and it went through the roof. Anytime a car is cheap and fun, people are entry-level enthusiasts are going to get into it, and those are the guys that are having the bulk of the crashes. So I think it depends on, you know, the Miata is renowned as cheap and fun, and when we have fun, sometimes we have a little bit too much fun and end up, you know, writing off a car, and that all goes into the database.
So the database calculates how much they have to pay out for all of the accidents of this model.
Exactly.
Got it. Well, so in this listener's case, maybe it's not the number of cars that decided his premium, but it's really which car is considered the primary car.
Exactly. So, you know, you're driving 20,000 miles a year on your one car. You pick up a second car, and now you're driving 10,000 miles a year in each. So whichever one they assign you to based on that rating algorithm, that's going to be your primary vehicle. And so, yeah, effectively you go down from 20,000 to 10,000 miles a year on that more expensive car. So it's not supposed to work that way, but there's certainly certain situations where adding a second car can actually lower your insurance price.
Wow. So there's a ton of assumptions on the algorithm part.
Oh, yes.
Interesting. So let's talk more about the preferred tier, non-preferred tier. So let's say if you get 2 points on your record, you're automatically, wait, not yet. Until you have the third point, then you're kicked down to the non-preferred.
And it depends, you know, incidents on your driving record will affect your insurance price for 3 years, and we're authorized to make decisions based on what we see going back 5 years in our driving record. So, you know, if you got those 2 points, but you just had a huge crash 4 years ago, odds are they will probably dump you or kick you off to that non-preferred tier. They kind of have that discretion at that point. So it comes into, you know, the actuary science of risk versus reward. Yes, we can charge this person more, but the data shows that he's now 20% additionally more likely to have an accident that we have to pay for.
What are the signs that people can spot if whether or not they're in the preferred tier or not?
It is basically going to be, you know, what the writing company is, and it gets into a whole bunch of minutiae. You know, Mercury Insurance Company has different writing companies that they're filed with to charge different rates under California law. So Mercury Insurance Company is their preferred tier and California Auto Insurance Company is their non-preferred tier. So it's kind of hard to tell, you know, you're probably going to have better luck looking at your driving record. If you've got a bunch of points on there and you're paying a whole lot of money, odds are you're probably in that non-preferred tier.
Got it. So let's say if somebody had one accident and 1 point, chances are that they're still in the preferred tier.
Yes. And then at that point, you know, they would be up to the company's discretion to drop you. If you've been with them for a good long time, probably going to fudge the regulations in your favor. You know, insurance companies, again, get a very bad rap. They are here to make money, but, you know, they feel that sense of loyalty too. You know, they like to see that you've had the policy with them for the entire time you've had your driving career. It makes them a lot more lenient when it comes time to make that decision.
Let's say if you haven't had an accident in a while and one driving record did fall off your record, do these companies automatically revert you back from, you know, the non-preferred tier to the preferred tier?
No, they don't.
They don't?
No. Okay. That's why, you know, it's one of those things where you need to, an insurance agent, I think, again, plugging insurance agents, is going to know that. You know, they're going to, I would do it. I'd set a reminder for myself 3 years from now, check this person's driving record and see if we can move them back to the preferred tier. So it is the transfer to the more expensive policy happens automatically. The transfer back to the preferred tier does not happen automatically.
So what I'm hearing is you have to call and request that.
Exactly.
Got it. And then do they acknowledge the fact that there is even a rating like that? It's like, hey, can you put me back to the preferred tier? Would they say, what are you talking about?
And it depends, you know, Progressive, for example, isn't that way. You know, some companies do have this preferred and non-preferred tier. Some companies do only preferred business and you're out if you fall out of that category. And some companies, you know, have the non-preferred tier as their core business.
Wow. So one of our listeners asked a question of, if you totaled your car, let's say in the canyons, mm-hmm. what do you even do? Like, do you call insurance companies about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think of one incident in particular. You know, I look at the claim notes and reach down to open a bag of jelly beans and left the road and struck a signpost. Really, on Mulholland in your 911S, I'm sure that the jelly beans were what happened, right? It wasn't the red mist. And so, you know, when I totaled my FRS, I called the insurance company and said, what happened? I said, well, the speed of the vehicle exceeded the skill of the driver at the time. I frankly just fucked up. I backed it into the wall. You know, my bad. It was my fault. That is covered. You know, it's not ideal. You'd obviously don't want to total your car and have the company pay out, but just I made a mistake and wrote off the car is covered. So you don't... Insurance companies are very armored up in terms of looking for people trying to commit insurance fraud. And the tougher life gets, the more people turn to questionable means of generating income. So, you know, I recommend tell them exactly what happened. You know, there's not really many situations where you can say, well, but, you know, the squirrel ran across the road, so it's not really my fault. So, you know, tell them the truth. Call and file a claim. Crashing your car off the side of the canyon is covered. In terms of, you know, getting the most value for your car, there's not a whole lot that you can do. You know, it's one of the unfortunate truths of life is your car is not worth as much as you thought it was for the most part. Specialty auto gets a little bit different, but you know, you buy the car for 30 grand, you leave the dealership, it's now worth 25 grand because it's a used car. Right. And a lot of people, you know, that's a tough pill to swallow because you look at this car as value as what you put into it, not what it's worth right now. So, you know, a couple things you can do, more photographs and documentation and evidence, anything you have. So I think in my situation, I had a bunch of photos of the car looking really good. I had just put new tires on it, upgraded the headlights and all that. So I just kind of handed all that to my claims adjuster and said, you know, this intent for this car was to preserve it as the last analog sports car. And you can't simply replace that anymore because there's no more analog sports cars. So, you know, to some extent, there's not a whole lot you can do, but anything you can do which documents that your car was in better than average condition, upgrades that you had made to it and things like that. In that situation, Mercury wrote me a check, I think it was 13 grand, for a 5-year-old Scion FRS with 50,000 miles on it.
Right.
So, you know, I would have liked more. I was happy with the amount that they paid out. It's kind of matches reality, as it were.
So do insurance agent decide your premium or does the algorithm decide that?
It's the algorithm. So the insurance agent, you know, collects your data and punches it in. But that's why, you know, people constantly ask, you know, what's this going to cost? I'm very reluctant to quote a price because you don't really know until you punch in all the data in the system and answer all the questions and you get the price at the end of it.
So since the algorithm is really what's doing all the stuff behind the scenes, there's no need to treat an insurance agent nicely, right?
Yeah, no, actually, they're horrible people. Just throw rocks at them all day long. No, and it's the sort of thing where that is, you know, it's easy to get a bad rap as an insurance agent, but really what you're trying to do is help people protect what they've worked so hard to earn and help them navigate this big complicated mess and those 1,000 questions and, you know, which company should I be using? Is this price really a savings or is there some landmine hidden in this policy contract that when I go to need the policy, it's not going to be there for me?
Let's say if your car is totaled, you can tell them that, hey, I ran out of talent. Would that count towards your collision or is it comprehensive coverage?
So anytime your car is under your control and crashes into something, that's collision. And anytime anything crashes into you, that is comp. So, you know, one piece of advice, if you meet Toge Deer one night,
yes,
hit the deer. Don't dodge the deer and hit the tree, because if you hit the tree, that's your fault. If the deer is in motion and you hit it, that's the deer's fault.
Interesting. So comprehensive insurance does not count against you.
Exactly. And I think of a better way to describe that is collision and other than collision. You know, collision is you crashing your car into something or somebody crashing you. Other than collision is any of the other things that can happen that would damage a car.
Well, okay, so let's say if I have 1 point on my license, hypothetically, and I have 10 comprehensive collisions, other people's fault, mm-hmm. or the deer's fault, would the insurance still drop me because now they have to pay something?
Yeah, and that's one of the really interesting things, and it's a hard pill to swallow, is that your driving record is clear of accidents, but every week you have your windshield replaced, you know, you hit well parked several times. It comes to the point where you're clear of at-fault accidents, but your claim history is full of comprehensive claims. A lot of companies will drop you or decline to offer the coverage. And I think some of that comes back into the times get tough and people look for any way they can save money. You know, if you backed into the wall in your garage, well, that's embarrassing. And also, it's your fault. So, you know, wait a couple of days and go park it at the movie theater. And, oh, man, somebody hit me when I was in the movies. It's not my fault. And I think that's we've reached a point where that has happened so many times that insurance companies are now looking at people with a bunch of comprehensive claims as either, you know, you park it negligently and you're doing something that creates this additional damage to the car, or you're just kind of gaming the system.
So how many comprehensive claims is too much?
I'd say probably two.
Really?
It's going to be one of those things that everybody's appetite is going to be a little bit different on those. You know, and again, as happens, the first one is, it is what it is. You know, that's what insurance is for. We'd like to not pay out anything, but that's kind of the name of the exercise. The second one for a similar cause, the third one for sure is going to be a red flag.
Are we talking about like a 3-year span?
Yeah, generally speaking, within a 3-year period is when those things appear on your record. In California, they can charge for incidents for 3 years, and then they can, 5 years back, they can guide their underwriting decisions on whether or not to offer coverage looking back 5 years.
You know, Brian, I just find it really refreshing that because you're also a car guy, all these terminologies are not very foreign to you. Sometimes when I talk to my insurance agent, I just feel like I'm talking to an alien. You know, stuff like the canyons, or I don't even think that he knows what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And conversely, they have insurance has its own dictionary and vocabulary of terms too.
So definitely do not say to the claim agent that you towgate or something like that, right?
Yeah, I'd recommend, you know, I was going for a drive up the mountains to look at the going to the scenic overlook up there. You know, and again, you can say the truth. There's a lot of situations where you can be overly truthful, shall we say. So again, I mean, insurance agencies and insurance companies, adjusters in particular, are very good at investigating and getting to the bottom of things. So, you know, you don't want to necessarily lie to them, but you don't have to tell them that you were in a train of 13 Miatas.
Definitely. So what are some of the things that you think we haven't covered, but people should know about auto insurance?
I mean, it's one of those things where it's a crucial part of life and it's kind of misunderstood. So, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of people think about is if you've modified your car, insurance is now dead to you, you know, and for the most part, that can be true. You know, most of companies will give you up to $3,500 for wheels and paint or audio equipment. They hear about your turbos and cages and suspension and all that. And not only do they not want to pay for that if the claim happens, they might deny coverage on the car entirely. So that's one of the beautiful things about Hagerty is we will accept a modified car. You know, it's a lot of money and time and love that goes into this. And so there's definitely a perception out there that once you've modified your car, you're kind of on your own for the value of it. So one of the things that makes me proud to work for Hagerty is providing that peace of mind and security to these people that have modified their cars.
Let me just tell you a common scenario, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say in the last 3 years, somebody, let's say typical Joe, probably had like one comprehensive claim, one auto collision, 1 point on the record. How close is Joe to being dropped?
Would say probably pretty close. You know, so each of those is assigned a point value. And then again, you're at the 2 and then you lose the good driver discount. That third one being the comprehensive claim, you know, they wouldn't necessarily drop you guaranteed, but it is certainly something they could do at that point. And it's in this marketplace in California, I feel like they're going to be leaning more towards the dropping people who are costing them money than the, you know, calling it water under the bridge and kind of accepting that anyway. California is definitely a very, very difficult time for insurance right now.
Got it. But then if you're with the insurance company for a while, that might help a little bit.
Exactly. And it's not going to be the be all end all, but certainly, you know, well, they're humans just like the rest of us. If I've seen that you've been a customer of ours for your entire driving career, I'm definitely going to think about that before pressing the non-renew button.
So let's say if you have multiple cars, let's say four cars, right? And you got one accident, one comprehensive, and one point, but mm-hmm. you have four cars. So it's sort of like, are you evaluating that from like a one-to-one perspective? Or is it like, oh, you have four, but you only have one accident on one car?
And that's done at the driver perspective, you know? So whoever it is that the operator of the car. So if it's just me and I've got the four cars there, yes, it's spread across the four cars, but I'm still the same person having all those same incidents. So having more cars wouldn't make the company less likely to decline you over driving record issues.
Oh, wow. Okay. So let's say if somebody does get dropped from their insurance, what do they do? Then they're uninsured.
That is the real question. You know, there's a bunch of insurance companies that target the high net worth space and premier drivers and all that. And then there's a bunch of companies who target those of us who have lousy driving records. Trying to think, you know, Progressive was somewhat notorious for being the carrier of last resort for years. And they're kind of getting away from that because they're, you know, obviously it's not the cheapest way to provide insurance to people. But, you know, there are certain companies like, when I got my license revoked for having too many speeding tickets, I ended up with Bristol West Insurance Company, which is, you know, it's one that's based in Florida. And so that's what you'll find is there are tons of options that are not as desirable from a coverage or customer service or pricing perspective, but there's still options out there for you.
Got it. So just because you were dropped by one company doesn't mean that you cannot shop around.
Exactly.
In California, is it against the law to not have insurance?
Yes. It is required to have at least liability insurance of 50. Ooh, no, they just doubled that. 30, 60, 10 is the minimum insurance requirements for California. And so again, you know, it keeps you legal. $10,000 in property damage coverage. I mean, drive around and look at the cars you see on average. Imagine hitting one of those things. I don't recommend going any less than 100, 300, 100. And if you own a home, that's a huge target for lawyers and marauding BI attorneys to seize. So yeah, if you get a home, I recommend having an umbrella policy because it'll stack $1 million in protection on top of your auto and home insurance policies.
Got it. And let's say if you get dropped from one insurance, but you really do love their service. After 3 years, when that record kind of falls off a little bit, can you go back and say, can you reinsure me?
Exactly. Yeah. So you wait for your record to clear up and then, hey, I'm back.
And then they can say yes or no.
Yeah.
So when you say that buttons that says renewal, right? Mm-hmm. Is it the agent making the decision or the algorithm?
No. The agents, you know, and again, agents get lumped in with the insurance companies at the same time too. But remember, an agent is, you know, an independent business. That's your friend in the insurance business. You know, they can... A lot of people will say, give me a deal. Well, when you're an insurance agent, I plug in your data and that's the price that comes out. So the deal I can give you is being completely upfront with you, telling the truth and making sure that your policy is done correctly. I can't offer a savings. Generally speaking, in insurance, if you find a savings, that's probably because an important coverage is missing. So it's not necessarily such a good thing.
Got it. So it's really the insurance company, whoever is pressing the button in their company.
Exactly. And, you know, insurance, being an insurance agent was a great financial consultant relationship. And yeah, in the last decade overall, 5 years in particular, it has become a very thankless and adversarial job because, you know, we're just basically delivering bad news all the time. The prices just keep going up. But it is not the agent who sets the prices. You know, their role is to look at all the options that are available to you and recommend the best one, you know, the best balance of coverage and cost. So they're not the ones making the decision, but they have to sit on the fence and explain your side of things to the insurance company and the insurance company side of things to you.
Got it. Well, at the end, I just want to ask you this. What is the most dangerous car in the eyes of the insurance? What are some of the most dangerous cars?
So the GT series Porsches are kind of notorious for being widowmakers. Obviously, the Mustang is law of large numbers. There's a ton of them out there. A lot of them are modified, and you'll see them going through the crowd at Cars and Coffee often. Generally speaking, though, you know, anything which is cheap and fun or fast is going to be a problematic thing for insurance because it's not the way that you drive it. It's the collective. I like to think insurance is a very interesting mix of capitalism and socialism. It's for sure a for-profit industry, but it's all of us pooling our money to help out those who have had a bad day. So anytime the general public is crashing this car more often than any other type of car, that's going to be an expensive car to insure.
it's like two sides of the extreme, like either an 86 or a GT3 Porsche.
Exactly. And, you know, again, cheap and fast, I have a WRX, which is great. It is, I think, the third most ticketed vehicle in the United States. I think Dodge Ram, it's got to be a Nissan Altima, right? It must be the second one because Altima drivers are all crazy. And then the WRX. So, you know, I've done my part. I've had that thing for 4 years. I've gotten 4 speeding tickets in it. So.
Right. So, Brian, if anybody has any question about insurance, can they reach out to you on Instagram?
Absolutely, yeah.
Perfect. Wow, Brian, thank you so much for all of your insight today. I'm so honored to have you on the show.
My pleasure. No, thanks for having me out. You know, it's nerve-wracking to know you're going to be recorded, but yeah, I appreciate your style. It feels like I'm just chatting with my friend, and a good time for me, and hopefully I leave your listeners with maybe a little bit better understanding of the way insurance works. And
perfect. You know, I always tell people that knowledge is power. Knowledge open up a lot of options for you and guidance, right? If I had met you a little bit earlier and had this conversation earlier, I would have avoided so many quote-unquote potholes in life, mm-hmm. and avoided so many nightmares and countless nights of worrying. But now I feel like I'm much more clear, and I think a lot of our listeners would find value in our conversation as well. So that being said, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Sociology of Cars podcast is produced by Sociology of Everything, supported by 0-60 Studios in San Dimas, California. This is Jimmy XIE. See you next time.